This Week in Retronauts, keep your hands off my weird controller. Welcome to Retronauts. I'm Jeremy Parrish, and this podcast is coming to you live from a studio, but by the time you are listening to it, it will no longer be live. I don't know what I'm talking about. Guys, what the hell's happening? Who are you?
Hey, I'm Ben Elton.
I'm Benj Edwards.
I'm Chris Sims. I'm so bad.
Still?
Are you?
Yes.
Like a Michael Jackson bad, or no, like
the power glove.
Oh, that's like Michael Jackson bad.
I mean, kind of, yeah.
Well, okay, Michael Jackson's a different kind of bad these days.
Yeah.
But at the time of his album,
in context,
it was power glove bad.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, did I introduce myself? I'm Jeremy Parrish.
You did.
Okay, I did. Well, yes. I'm still Jeremy Parrish. That's great.
Still?
This is going to be a great one, I can tell. Well, that's fine. It's a broad topic kind of episode, and I think it's actually a stealth advertisement for Binge's joystick business. Is that correct, Binge?
That is correct.
You did suggest this topic, and we went along with it like suckers.
Yes, I happen to have made one of the weirdest joysticks ever made, which is the world's first third-party Virtual Boy joystick.
There is that. You made multiple versions of the Virtual Boy controller, but yes, the fighting stick, that's a deep cut, because the only game that really works for is Hyper Fighting, which is a homebrew port of Street Fighter II, of which only like 60 copies exist in the world.
Yep, and I made 10% of those joysticks, probably, about like 10 of them, I don't know.
Oh, you made that many controllers?
Yeah.
And I think two of them ended up in New York, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
There was an event at Video Games New York where they had a Hyper Fighting tournament where two people sat down, played Hyper Fighting against each other using your sticks. I got a press release from it, which was the strangest thing. I was like, why is Video Game New York sending me a press release about joysticks a guy made a few blocks over from me?
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? Yeah, Retro RGB, and I don't know his real name, but he
it's Bob.
Okay. He bought one of my sticks and then was inspired to create his own Virtual Boy fighting stick based on that, using a hacked up pad. Hmm. So they played one of mine versus one of his. It was like, you know, it's like a real arcade fighting stick, his with the Virtual Boy output. And mine has a custom controlled PC board, which is kind of crazy that I went to that detail for it. But hey, it's there. It's also compatible, by the way, with the Super Nintendo and the NES, because they all use the same protocol.
Okay, so you just have to get a different adapter?
It's really weird, yeah.
Hmm. Are there a lot of Virtual Boy to Super NES controller adapters out there in the world?
I think a few people have built them, because you know how the Virtual Boy has two D-pads? I'm pretty sure someone has made a mod of that to use the two D-pads for Smash TV, something like that.
Okay, that would make sense. I could also see it working for... Were there any of the Naxxit pinball games on Super NES? I think they might have.
I don't
released, feel released like only a, in, Genesis. In Japan.
There's a Genesis one.
Yeah, there's Turbo and Devil Genesis, but
Crush.
There's probably like Super Crush or something.
Yeah, Mega. Yeah, I don't know. I've never seen one, actually, now that you mention it. But there's something called either Hollywood Pinball or some other game somebody wanted me to make a special joystick for. That it was one of my, what I call the BX-115, has... It has two joysticks. The right joystick controls X, Y, A, and B for Smash Brothers. I mean, for Smash TV. And the left stick is the usual thing. So, and then he wanted me to put pinball buttons on the left and right sides of it for this.
So what is that, like the shoulder pad buttons?
Yeah,
the shoulder buttons?
Actually, I had to shoulder code pad. Them to be the left on the D-pad and A on the pad.
Hmm.
Those buttons are equivalent. So, plus, the shoulder buttons are on
extra
the top.
Extra features, yeah.
Because in mine, you can, just like the Virtual Boy stick with two sticks, as you know, there are two buttons on the top so you can hit them with your other fingers while you're controlling the stick. So it's like that for Smash TV, but if you want to play pinball, you can do that.
You also made a controller that's just one button, right? It's, what is that one called? The BX-1 or something?
The BX-10, I think. The BX-10. Yeah. The Cyclops. Marcin Wickery, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he custom ordered that. He's a keyboard guy. So he just wanted that to take to presentations, to just have a button to push. Just a single button in the middle.
So it's not actually used for video games.
It's a USB thing, a button.
I'm trying to think, is there a game that would work for?
I did make a two button thing for Dropkick on Steam.
Two buttons. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about one button here.
Yeah.
Is there a game that controls...
Yes, I mean, like the Super Mario Run that they put on.
Yeah, like a phones. Runner game. Okay,
it's just jump.
robot unicorn attack or whatever.
Yeah, any of those infinite runners you could probably
do. Flappy Bird or something. Button. Yeah,
the runner controller.
So I guess I've made more weird controllers than I thought.
Yeah. I mean, that's the great thing about controllers is, you know, we use the D-pad or now the dual analog stick. That's kind of the standard. And, you know, it's become a standard because it's so versatile. Like, most games you want to control, you can wrap your hands around them somehow and coax pretty good performance out of those form factors. But, you know, it wasn't always a given that these would be the natural form factors. In fact, before the NES, there was no such thing as a D-pad outside of the Game & Watch handhelds. Mm-hmm. And even after that kind of became standardized, there's still a lot of games that require special controllers. You know, things like Dance Dance Revolution or obviously Rock Band and Guitar Hero, where you want instruments that, or, you know, in the case of Rock Band, instruments, but controllers that kind of provide a special function for you and allow you to do things that you can't easily do with a D-pad. Like, you can play DDR with a D-pad, but oh my God, why would you do that to yourself? Don't do that. Use a dance pad. It's fine. So, yeah, so basically this episode is about some of the outliers, some of the more outlandish creations that people have not only created as boutique projects like Binge does, you know, kind of a small market, farm-to-table joysticks.
Organic, free-range.
Yes, absolutely. But actually have put into boxes and sold in stores, mm-hmm. mass-distributed at Walmart or, you know, in Japan at SoftMap or...
SoftMap?
Yeah, SoftMap. It's a chain in Japan. If you've been to Japan and bought video games, you've seen them. But if you haven't, then you wouldn't have seen them.
I have not.
Okay, well, there you go. And there's probably electronics chains in Europe also, but I don't know what they are. Safeway, I don't know. something on the high street.
Thistleton's Games.
Thistle Street.
That's only in the UK.
Thistleton's Gaming Delights.
Okay. Sure. So these controllers that we're talking about have been sold at Walmart or SoftMap or Thistleton's. And some of them are pretty bizarre. Some of them have only single use cases. And we're not really talking about a whole lot of Wii controller peripherals here because that's almost cheating.
That's peripherals.
Yeah. I mean, well, they were controllers sometimes or like controller add-ons. Yeah, adapters. But they went too far with that.
There's one that's a bowling ball. Have you seen that? It's a physical plastic bowling ball you clip around.
Was that for Wii or are you talking about the Zavix?
It's not the Zavix port thing. It's a blue bowling ball. You clip it around a Wii controller and it has these, you know, pass-through button, mm-hmm. like big long sticks inside. So when you push the top of the bowling ball, it pushes the buttons and you swing it like a bowling ball.
But like in the end, all those things are basically just different ways to hold a Wiimote. Right.
Yeah. So yeah, that's not what we're talking about.
It's basically emulated. It's not like Rock Band where the controller is the guitar. It's like, here is something that resembles a gun that you snap the Wii remote into, which, you know, that's more economical than actually buying a new controller every time you want to play a specialized game. But, you know, there are some specialized games that really demand a custom controller for it. Sitting behind you guys is the Arkanoid 2 controller for Famicom. And Arkanoid 2 never came out here on NES, but Arkanoid did. Mm-hmm. And it shipped with a controller that was basically a paddle controller with a button.
I have it. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's a nicely made controller. I mean, it's basically that, except it's in gray.
Yeah.
It's basically like and a kind of like a radio dial for controlling your.
Oh yeah, the Arkanoid 2 controller. Arkanoid 2 had two players, so that has a pass-through port to allow a second player to plug in their Arkanoid 2 paddle controller, because why go esoteric unless you can just double go it. All in on it.
Yep.
We can hold it up to the mic and you can hear the clicky sound.
It's just because the Famicom only
visual aids on this podcast.
Famicom only has one 15-pin accessory port. So
yeah, the Famicom was a weird system because the controllers were hardwired into it. And so you didn't have the ability to, you know, change your joystick out like you could on the NES, where it's just like, oh, I want to play a light gun game. So you take out the controller and plug in the light gun. Instead, you had one pin, like pinout port on the front, the bottom front of the console, and you could plug one device in there. And it's kind of a strange, like you ended up with some strange peripherals, and we'll talk about some of those. But all throughout history, people have, by people, I mean publishers, have said, and developers, like, what is the best way to control this game? So, you know, in arcades, where you had custom hardware built from the ground up for each game, it was really easy to give a game, like an arcade game, a cabinet, the controller that best made use of the interface and best complemented the gameplay. So you had things like the Flight Yoke in Star Wars, which I just recently played on and was like, oh man, it was so, it feels so good to play that old vector art game because the control yoke is so good. Or Paperboy, which was a modified Star Wars yoke and resembled bicycle handles. Or Spy Hunter with a steering wheel and a pedal that you're like using to gun down spy cars as you drive along the road.
The table flipping game.
Yes,
the table. Flip the table.
Yes, or the Babunga Bunga where it's your controller is a finger and you're like poking plastic butt.
Yeah.
Or the hook to the Fist of the North Star where you're punching the targets.
Right. Or there's, you know, things like Silent Scope in Golgo 13 where it's actually a gun with a sniper sight in it and you're actually viewing the entire game screen through like a little sight that only gives you a view of
through
a portion
periscope.
of the actual screen. So if you like look at the screen, you can see where your target is. But if you're looking through the scope, then you can only see like a small window as you try to center in on it.
Although I feel that's like cool. There's kind of two like major categories of these weird controllers. And some of them are what you were just talking about, where it was being designed to either a specific game or at least like a genre, like it had a target in mind. And then it seems like there's some of these other ones that are like, well, this is a cool technology that we can use for input. Let's make it. And then like they're kind of looking for an application. And and a lot of those crash and burn because they're not really good at anything, but a few of them found a niche.
Yeah, I divided it into three categories on the notes that you're looking at. Special purpose controllers, like what Jeremy's talking about, like you're driving a train, so you need a train controls, or motion controllers that you use your body to do things.
Oh, yep. Did you get Dincha to go on here?
I don't think so, but you know, there's so many I couldn't put them all.
Okay, sorry. Keep talking about your categories.
The third is, well, there's actually four. One of them is crazy gamepad modifications with weird things, and then joysticks. So that's sort of the categories I divide them into. Which one we talk about first? Who knows? Spin the wheel, Chris.
I really want to talk about the weird controllers, like the weird, like
that's
very
what we're doing.
Special. No, like the weird, like,
look, control pads.
Yeah, control pads.
Ones
that are very like purpose driven, whether they're gimmicky or whether they're like, you know, the one that I am holding currently, Ben, which is your copy of the ASCII Grip, which is the one handed gamepad. That there was one of these I remember for Super NES as well. I remember it being advertised in Nintendo Power, and I always thought it looked really cool. Because it was basically like just the circular part of an SNES controller with buttons on each side.
Mm-hmm.
And it was advertised as being for playing RPGs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it would leave your free hand for things like eating or drawing maps. And I always thought it was funny that they put eating in there. And then I had the experience of accidentally playing Civilization V for 14 hours without realizing it. And I got it. I understood.
Well, and like at the time, like, you know, a lot of RPGs were just really grindy. So you'd have times where you were paying attention, but then you'd have a lot of times where you're just wandering around the map grinding and multitasking while doing something else.
Yeah. Like, so,
they predicted, you know, two screen mobile phone use while playing a video game back 20 years before it was actually possible.
Also, yeah. I will point out, if you think about holding both hands up together for a long period of time is more tiring than having like one hand resting on something, holding a controller, as we've learned with the Switch.
Yeah. The Joy-Con split them up. Finally solved that problem.
Yep.
And so now you can't do that with the Switch Lite.
Oh man.
A thing that I think is really nice about these is that they do lend themselves well to accessibility issues and that you can play it with one hand. And it's a shame that this controller that I'm holding, which is actually really neat, and you should go hunt down a picture. It's the PlayStation ASCII Grip. could not be used on like a PlayStation 4 because it doesn't have dual analog sticks, which every game uses. It's just the D-pad.
Well, and also it uses a PS1
plug. Well, yes, but like a similar design.
There is one with a thumbstick. I've seen it. Yeah.
But it only has one, right?
Yeah, I think it only has one.
So you can't do like camera controls.
They might have another mini one.
Has anyone made one with like an analog stick on the front and the back?
It might be, yeah.
It seems like it'd be awkward to hold, but I don't know.
I'm trying to imagine playing God of War 2018 like this morning. And so I'm trying to imagine playing that on this and it just wouldn't work. I also think it's really weird that on the face, there's two triangle buttons, two square buttons, and then where the trigger buttons would be on a normal controller are circle and X, and the trigger buttons are on the face. And that seems very confusing.
It kind of is, but that's done, you know, to
so that you can accommodate
accommodate the most common controls. Although triangle, really? Like that's a
well, no, I think some of the more common ones are on the back so that you can hit the circle and square while you're using the D-pad.
Got it. Okay,
and this is for left and right handedness.
Triangle is always the menu screen.
Yeah. Because you've only got one hand on there, so you're using your thumb on the D-pad, and then you want your fingers to be able to reach the other buttons that you want to use at the same time. So I think it makes sense that they put them back there on the back.
No, and okay, then, so to describe this controller, it's palm size. It kind of looks like a computer mouse that's been turned upside down, and on its belly it has a whole bunch of PlayStation buttons. And then what would be the top of the mouse is now, you know, the backside of it, and it's been kind of contoured to fit into your hand so you grip it.
To be a trigger, yeah.
And there is a D-pad kind of in the center of the face, but that's
it's a Type 1 next generation phaser.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
But it kind of looks like, you know, like a remote control for a massage chair or something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out what it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Like, I want to play this and also, you know, like my lower spot, my lumbar, you know, have it massaged.
Yeah. But you can hold this in either hand and have your thumb on the D-pad and simultaneously be hitting X and circle with your finger on the back trigger side. And then you can skip over with your thumb to triangle or square or start and select or the R and L buttons when you need to.
Yeah. But how perfect would that be for even today, like for Pokemon or for any like Game Boy Advance games? Like that would be such a great thing to be
like. This is actually a similar form.
It's not really, but in function, it's somewhat similar to the Pokeball that came out with Pokemon Let's Go Eevee and Pikachu, which is just shaped like a Pokeball, of course. And then the circle in the center of the ball is a thumbstick, but then it's also got a button on the top. So you can hold it in one hand and have your thumb on the stick and hit the one button with your finger.
Yeah, this controller, when it came out for PlayStation, got a lot of like, one-handed controls. What are you going to play, Dead or Alive? But like functionally, I understand what they were thinking. I almost bought one of those back in the day. Because I was like, I play a lot of RPGs. I could see this being useful, but ultimately, I didn't need it, so I didn't pick it up. But like, I can see the value, and I don't think it's a coincidence that so many control concepts, like a one-handed control, have kind of referenced back to this and built on this concept.
By the way, I recently did a slideshow for PC Mag about accessibility controllers, and that's why I have this actually, because I was researching all the different things, and so there are a bunch of these ASCII grips out in the world that have never been used, and you can still buy them for a pretty good price. And a lot of people who have mobility issues or can only use one hand for whatever reason will get an ASCII grip and either modify it or get an adapter to use it with some other kind of console.
That's really a neat design.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it is surprising to me that those weren't, and maybe they were, and I just don't remember because that was 20 years ago, but like it would be surprising if those weren't marketed as that, like as
they were not at the time. Yeah.
Very surprising
because, you know, it's a different climate and stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
they weren't, not that I can remember. Yeah, I never saw anything that. Like, hey, if you, you know, play with physical disadvantages, this is perfect for you. It was just like Dead or Alive.
Well, that being such an issue today, like I know that Celeste, to use a recent example, like a lot of people were very happy about Celeste having the like accessibility controls, like you can turn off dying in that game and you don't really suffer any penalties for it. And that would be a perfect controller for Celeste, which is a great game. So
that's cool.
I know I've seen some videos, I'm pretty sure Microsoft has an internal team
that
works specifically on accessibility stuff and has built some really interesting rigs to allow people with extremely limited mobility to do.
Yeah, they did that big commercial about it.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah,
I saw in a movie theater.
The reason I did that slideshow is because of my joysticks I've been building. Turns out a lot of people who buy them have some sort of nerve damage in their thumbs or something, and they can't play a D-pad. So there are three or four people said, oh my God, I never thought I could play a Virtual Boy again. But because of my joysticks, dual joysticks, they can play it. So it turned into sort of an accessibility product without me realizing it. It's really neat.
Right. Yeah, there was actually a team back at when I was in grad school at UNC doing that sort of stuff too, just taking like off-the-shelf stuff and adapting it to accessibility solutions.
This is now the ASCII grip podcast.
It's a neat thing.
No, it is. Like it is. And I'm glad that we all see the good in it, besides, you know, just like the goofy jokes about it kind of element, because that's definitely how it was received back in the day. But yeah, I think it's valuable, and its design has sort of echoed through the decades. So that speaks pretty well of it. But we do want to talk about some other strange gamepads. And to start with, we're going to talk about Namco and the bonkers stuff they did during the PS1 generation. I don't know what was in the water over at Namco during the PlayStation 1 era, but they went all out and just did all kinds of weird things. I mean, they created the GunCon controllers, which were light guns, but they were like super accurate light guns because they had a patch cable that connected to the video port. And there was like a pass-through, so your game system video cable, your composite connection, would run through that. And then they came out with later ones that worked with component video. But it made it super accurate because it was like using the video signal to verify the placement of your shots, you know, the targeting. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. And it's kind of considered the gold standard of light guns from the CRT era. But then they came up with their racing controllers. And these are great. I've never actually had the opportunity to use these in a game, but we did have these at the office just like laying around when I worked at Ziff Davis, 1UP.com. And the first one is called the NegiCon, which N-E-G, it's a capital G-C-O-N. And I don't know why it has that name, but it's basically an analog racing controller that existed before PlayStation had analog controls. I mean, you had the analog stick, but this was, you know, before the dual analog. It was when you just had the D-pad or the four separate arrow buttons on the left side of the controller. And that's no way to play a racing game. So Namco, with, you know, having been about racing games with Ridge Racer, came up with a controller specifically for the purpose of playing racing games on PS1 well. So this is it's kind of like a, you know, sort of like a wing-shaped D-pad. It's similar in its rough contours to a PlayStation 1 controller. The little horns at the bottom, the grips aren't quite as pronounced. It's more of a flat wedge. But then it's actually two halves. And in the center, there is just like a connector, and you can twist the two halves individually. And the speed and distance with which you turn them basically translates into analog control for your car. So it's creating a steering wheel sensation without actually using a steering wheel.
Yeah,
like you would never control a car like this, but from what I understand from people who have used it, it's actually a very natural feeling control system and very precise, and gave them like great control over games like Ridge Racer and let them drift and everything really effectively.
So also, you rotate it away from you to
literally
turn right
twist, yeah,
and like, towards you to turn left?
I mean, you can envision it as rotating one side away from you or the other side towards you. It's because you can twist from either side.
You know, it's kind of like tank controls where you,
it's really just,
you
yeah,
have two
side
levers
forward,
and you push
back.
One forward and one back to.
I don't think that's a good analogy.
It's weird.
I think so. Like you're moving the two. Like, you're moving the two. Your two hands independently of each other and in relation to each other.
Yeah.
But you're not controlling both sides of the car like a tank.
Yeah, it's not two independent controls.
No,
the only thing that matters is how far the twist is.
It's kind of like a step, you know, backward from that.
But I'm pretty sure I did get a chance to try one of these out once, but just very briefly, so I didn't really get a good feel for it. And it's a weird motion, but it definitely gives you this fine-grained control that you wouldn't otherwise have on a controller from this era. But yeah, you just have to kind of get used to that, the feel of twisting back and forth between the two sides of your hand. And the thing about it is you're still using potentially the D-pad and buttons while you're doing this. So it can be a little disorienting at first, but I can certainly imagine getting used to it and getting really good performance out of it.
One other thing to note about the NEG Con, or however you...
NEGICon.
Is that I'm pretty sure the shoulder buttons are analog as well for gas. I swear I've read about that. I've never used it personally, but I'm pretty sure that they are proportional analog buttons.
Yeah, there was the ability for PlayStation controllers to have analog features. Like I said, Sony released a dual analog like flight stick really early in the PlayStation's life, but it was super limited. But you know, if you built that potential into your controller and your game, it did work. But you know, just so few people actually did that it wasn't really standard practice until 96, the DualShock came along, because you just couldn't assume that people were going to have a special controller. Like, I don't think the NEGICon was packed with anything. It was
come with Ridge Racer or something.
I mean, you could definitely buy Ridge Racer without the NEGICon.
Yeah.
But that it obviously supported all the
analog. So what about the other Namco stick?
The JogCon. The JogCon is from later. I believe that shipped with Ridge Racer Type 4 in 1999. Mm. And this one's different because it is much more like a standard PS1 controller, you know, a cross pad on the left side and four buttons on the right and shoulder triggers and everything. But in the center of it, it kind of echoes the N64 controller.
Yeah, that's what I was
but
thinking.
Instead of having an analog stick in the center, it's a dial, like a rotary dial with a depression for you to put your thumb down in. And you would use that more like a traditional steering wheel. And I never ended up buying this because I just don't play enough racing games. I did love Ridge Racer 4, but maybe not enough to buy a controller. But apparently this was also pretty good, although most of what I've read about the NEGICon versus the JogCon is that the NEGICon is better.
Wow.
Yeah, I haven't used the Jog one.
Anyway, so God bless Namco for this super weird collection of controllers they gave us on PS1. Weird, but, you know, good. Valuable.
Yeah, I love the quirks. I mean, that's what's so fun about video game history is looking back at all these neat, weird things that happen.
Yeah, and it looks, you know, a lot of the stuff you put on here, it kind of feels like they are, you know, part of a continuity of control ideas. Like, the next thing on the list is the TurboTouch 360, which does not work on Xbox 360.
Yeah,
do you want to talk about this one a little bit? Because it reminds me of the NES Max.
Yeah, this is something I've actually used. I have the Genesis version of this. There's a Super Nintendo one as well. And it is basically a standard control pad, but instead of a D-pad where you push up, down, left, right, there's a capacitive touch pad where the D-pad would be. So you can just slide your finger up, down, left, and right to trigger the directions. And so it's supposed to... They advertise it as less effort on your thumb, less, you know, strain and stuff. But it's a little weird because if you're used to a tactile response of pushing on something that...
Virtual D-pads were a kludge that they came up with for mobile phones because you couldn't have a D-pad on an iPhone. And it was something we adjusted to and dealt with, you know, kind of against our wills. But here they're saying, please willingly subject yourself to this. You have a great controller for your Genesis or Super NES, but you could have a much worse experience if you want.
It seems weirdly out of its time because now, you know, we have capacitive touchpads on everything, whereas it really wasn't a thing back then. Like, and probably a lot of it was just the novelty factor of having this thing that reacted to your touch without a button.
But. Yeah, I'd like to say that the capacitive touchpad that eventually became, it was new in the early to mid 90s. There was a company called Glide that created the first ones, and I think they licensed the patent or invented it for touchpads that were used on computers. I had a standalone touchpad that was like what you'd find on a laptop later.
Yeah.
And this is basically the sort of the same technology as a 90s laptop touchpad where you would use it as a mouse. Instead, it's on the left side for your thumb.
I feel like the immediate problem that I can see is, can you rest your thumb on this, or is it always just going to be like you're constantly pressing up? If you just sit your thumb
actually,
on.
You know,
or what does it return
right.
if your thumb's in the center?
Yeah, you'd have to return your thumb to center to stop registering
neutral,
it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, hey, we took the Atari 5200 controller and stuck it on your Super NES.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. But the 5200 controller is so bad, you can't even compare it in in any way.
I know, but if someone's making comparisons, you've messed up.
Yeah.
If it evokes the 5200 controller, you need to rethink your
life. But that was a proportional analog controller, 5200.
I know, it was different. I'm just saying
that because you know someone's going to point that out. So.
And it had to be you.
It had to be me.
All right.
I beat you to it.
So speaking of things that kind of seem to have precedent, the Reality Quest, the glove. It's got a what do you call it? An article right there in the middle, a definitive article in the middle of the name. This looks like it was a Nintendo Power Glove, but it's not.
I have never seen
this.
This is
something that came from my blog. I did a retro scan of this a long time ago. That's where this image is from. So I scanned an ad, and that's all I know about it. This is from like the late 90s. And this is sort of like a control pad for your fingers and your thumb that you slip on your hand. And you can, there's a thumbstick for your thumb, and there's a spot for buttons for your fingers. And then you can actually bend your wrist to control a proportional analog control somehow with that.
It's what the Rocketeer has.
Yeah, it's just like that. Or like Iron Man.
So it's a fingerless glove. It's not completely enclosed. Yeah, and then it's got the controllers basically nestled into your palm, and that's where the buttons and the stick are. But then it's also got this like mechanical arm connected to your wrist, which is how it's doing that analog thing.
Yeah, you strap it to your wrist, strap it to the around the middle of your hand, and then your fingers are free to push the buttons. And it was for PlayStation and Nintendo 64.
I think Chris is noticing the fact that it doesn't have critical reviews on here. It doesn't have like rave reviews from critics. It has reviews from Elliot, Mike, Matt, Seth, Katie.
You guys are geniuses, Nicholas. Says Seth.
Yeah.
I mean, if Seth says so, didn't he go on to, be a Street Fighter boss?
Yeah. Well, Katie says it's better and easier than the control pad.
Dang.
So.
More interactive.
Way to go, Katie. I'm sold.
As Katie goes, so goes the nation.
The reverse up-down switch is a really cool feature. I guess maybe that changes the way the analog wrist thing behaves.
Maybe so.
Probably.
It's wacky.
Okay.
It's
so
a weird thing.
Let's move along to the world of programmable controllers, because pressing buttons, it's so passe. What if you could press a button and the controller would do the rest of the work for you? These are like, it's basically macro controls for video games.
Yep.
I'm trying to think, the first one here is the Mortal Kombat combat controller. I'm disappointed. There's
with a K.
Combat is spelled with a K twice, but controller is not. And I feel like it's because you would have ended up with three Ks in a row, and they were like, oh, it's not 2019 yet. We can't
go
that way.
They could have just called it the Mortal Kombat controller. They didn't need to call it the Mortal Kombat combat controller.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of stumbles over itself.
This one is Goot from Jump Street because of that. It is unforgivable.
But there's also the NES Mega programmable gamepad. And both of these...
Oh, it is called the control.
Well, no, both of these were kind of in the same... Kind of approaching the same essence of video game laziness.
But the combat pad has a really weird feature. It's the only time I've ever seen this ever. It's the only controller that takes cartridges.
I mean, it's like the Dreamcast VMU, basically, but not.
But no screen.
So what are these cartridges? Are they like, I want to play Kano, I'm going to stick the Kano cartridge in here, and I can just press a button, and it will do his fatality for me.
Yeah, I think that's the way it works. Each cartridge has a different set, as if they took up more than 2 bytes of memory to have these things. But each has a set of data, and you plug them into the back of a slot on the back of the controller, and then you can push a button and do the fatalities and the special moves, I guess, automatically.
Yeah, it really seems like a gimmick that's like, how can we charge people 3 times for this one boutique controller that does one thing?
This was the the Aladdin deck enhancer of game controllers.
Yeah,
I do really like the. Like, it seems very, dramatic anime fight to pull out the cartridge and put it in the controller.
That's pretty much, the Mega Man Battle Network cartoon right there.
Yeah,
you've activated my trap cartridge.
It's what Kamen Rider Double does, so.
I did have a Super Nintendo joystick in the 90s that you could program with a sequence, so you could push a one button and do a Hadouken or whatever. That was really cool.
I feel like any system that has Killer Instinct on it, that's just, the ultimate cheat.
Yeah. So here's a question. It seems like the modern day equivalent of this would be to have a controller that has DLC. Does this exist? Has anyone made a controller that you can pay to download macros into? I know I'm giving someone an idea.
Don't put that out there in the world.
I could make one.
It's my fault.
You've opened Pandora's box. It's too late.
Yeah, in fact, you have to unlock the B button.
$10. I can't wait to pay my monthly licensing fee for my controller.
Oh my god, okay, what have I done?
The NES Mega.
So the NES Mega, the note you put here about can save passwords, that actually kind of makes sense. Like, if you play a lot of Contra and you're just too damn lazy to do the Konami code, there you go. Or you're too slow to input it before the title screen goes away. You can just program it into your Mega controller.
Or you have some of those like NES games with, like, you know, 30 character long iconographic passwords.
Yeah, but like, the thing about passwords is you're not using the same password every time. I guess if you want to like repeatedly fight Mike Tyson or something, sure. Well,
I guess it depends how easy it is to add one. Like if you could it once and then use it when you come back the next day. I don't know
the process of programming the password. It's not
really
thing.
Saving any time.
Yeah. Add some QR codes to Nintendo Power so you can scan it and get the password.
So this Mega, it has an LCD screen on it that lets you do various things and select them on the LCD screen. One is like super turbo mode and whatever, rapid fire, slow motion, and then it does, I think you can program it to memorize a sequence or somehow make it record the sequence of inputs to put in a password, I suppose, so you can replay it later. And
I remember when this thing came out and I saw it advertised and I was like, I could never use or want one of those things. What even is this? Okay, but what's really cool is the next one you put on here, the ASCII keyboard controller for GameCube. And I think they also did one for Dreamcast.
Yeah.
It's so good. It is a controller that has entered light speed and it's stretched out. And, you know, while it was trapped in that transition between normal and warp space, someone just slapped an ASCII keyboard on there.
Like an entire full-size computer keyboard.
Yes,
it's function keys.
It's the ASCII keyboard, not because it is by ASCII, the company, but because it comprises an entire computer keyboard, including function keys at the top. It's a freaking full ass keyboard. Like, you could use this on your PC.
So is there a Typing of the Dead port for GameCube? Wow. Like, can you
full ASCII keyboard?
ASCII keyboard.
What? I love this.
It is by ASCII though too.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. That
man,
is
how far did this rabbit hole go?
Blow
it's
my mind.
Definitely by ASCII.
So does it have like macros to do ASCII graphics?
That would be great. Yeah.
So you just complete the circle. Yeah. Why not?
I want to use this as just a normal keyboard. And I also want to use this as just a normal GameCube. Like, I want to play Smash Brothers with this.
Yeah, go to a tournament, pull this 3-foot long thing out and stick.
So you need a cable splitter so you can be playing Smash Brothers while you're typing up like your blog notes on like at the same time.
I don't think we should mention Smash Brothers on this podcast. It's a dirty word. Someone's going to point out the fact that ASCII is not what these computers are called, these keyboards. It's QWERTY, but ASCII is the character set. Shut up.
How many GameCube games actually made use of text input?
Phantasy Star Online.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that's it.
That's basically what it was for.
Okay. But I mean, if you bought the broadband adapter for your GameCube exclusively to play Phantasy Star Online, because that was the only series that took advantage of it, why not? You're in for a penny, in for a pound. Just go all the way, turn your stupid GameCube into a god dang computer. What the hell?
I could imagine putting this thing on your lap, like a keyboard, and then occasionally controlling the game on the sides like this. So it looks just like a GameCube control pad, but like he described, it's got a keyboard in the middle. So there you go.
It's like a Mad Magazine fold-in.
It is
exactly like that.
Al Jaffe, we miss you.
I just want this to be the default GameCube controller. When people think of the GameCube, I want this to be the image because I love it so much.
Yeah, this is not like a little mini keyboard. It's not like
the thumb pad.
A thumb pad. Yeah, it's not like Intellivision or ColecoVision. It is a full-sized keyboard that happens to have GameCube control elements on either side of it. I love it so much.
Bench, how difficult would it be to get one of these and like rig it up with Bluetooth so I could like use it on my Mac?
I don't know. We got to reverse engineer the GameCube protocol first and then figure it out. It's possible. Right. Anything's possible with enough time.
All right. Let's get to something simpler. The Spacetech Space Orb 360, which again does not work on the Xbox 360. Very confusing, Microsoft. What are you doing?
Yeah, what is this? What does that even mean?
So you know, it's your basic like wing style controller, like some of the Xbox.
But then it's got a giant black clown nose on it. It's got
this black sphere, like up in the upper left corner. And this was the thing, like, so these sphere controllers. I mean, only some of them were for gaming, but you also came out with these for people doing like CAD stuff and things when 3D graphics and manipulation first became a big thing on desktop PCs.
Yeah, I mean, I remember like, I worked with someone when I was in high school who had a trackball controller.
Yeah, and so there was something called the Space Mouse that it was more of a puck than a sphere, but it was a similar sort of idea where you have this control element that's just sort of floating on a connection that you can twist and rotate in various directions in an attempt to get like a full 6 degrees of freedom
and
out of one
lift
control.
It and right. depress it.
Yeah, so the idea so is you can get up, down, left, right, back, forward, and also twist, yaw, and roll on a single control element, which is hard to do. But there were a bunch of attempts at this when 3D became a thing, because people said, well, we're in 3D space, that's what we need, is this full 6 degrees of freedom control.
This is all about the Z-axis. So you've got, it's like a control pad with blue buttons on the right, but instead of a D-pad or something, you have a sphere, and you can, you know, pull it out, push it towards you, turn it left to right, or up and down, so it's 6 degrees of movement. And this is good for games like Descent that came out in 94, 96, or whatever.
Yep.
And so that was like a nightmare to try to control it on your keyboard. So if you had something like this, you can, you know, control, you can twist, you can move up, down, forward, and backward with it. And it didn't last very long. This is a niche product, but there were many others like this that I have not listed.
Yeah, I think
the control element, the bulb, I guess it's probably hard rubber or something, but yeah, to me it looks like those rubber syringes. But like when I was a kid, my parents had these like rubber bulbs with a little tip on the end they would use to like get water out of my ear. Yeah, like, you know, if you went swimming and you got water in your ear, they could use that
it's about that size.
Yeah, yeah, like I just want to reach out and squeeze this controller. Yeah.
Squeezing would have been a seventh degree of control. Yeah, that was not in this one. Only six.
Grasp the control bulb. That's what the manual says.
The control bulb. Right. But yeah, like I said, there were a lot of these on just mice and stuff, and I think they sort of fell out of favor after a while when people decided like you could do most of the things you needed to do in 3D CAD without having this full weird sphere thing.
So what does Benj Edwards from PC World say about Microsoft's Sidewinder Dual Strike controller, the next item on this list, which kind of also makes use of a bulb.
A bulb. Bulb. This is something I wrote in 2010 that I just copied and pasted, so I hope it's good. At some point in Microsoft's history, a designer there said, why not make a joystick that rotates about its lateral axis? So they did, and the Sidewinder Dual Strike was born. At the heart of the controller, the joint between the sphere and the protrusion, sits an analog potentiometer that does who knows what in the game of your choice. Boy, that sure is authoritative, Ben.
So this really looks like an evolution of that NegiCon.
Yeah, this is the NegiCon, basically.
The two sides of the controller independently of each other.
So, yeah, but it's Chris it's had one.
Yeah, I had this, and I did not remember that I had it until I saw the picture of it today.
Mm-hmm. So it was very striking and really stuck with you.
Well, well, here's the thing. I have mentioned this before on the show that I have never been much of a PC gamer. Like, I played, like, some RTS stuff. Like, I played StarCraft and Warcraft 3. But, like, 99% of my gaming has been on consoles. And now I kind of think this might be why. Because this controller is terrible. Like, aesthetically, it is not good. It's, like, asymmetrical. It moves in a weird direction. I can't imagine buying this new and wanting this. So I have to imagine it's something my mom picked up at a yard sale.
It does have the look of some weird alien artifact, kind of.
Yeah, it. I remember it not feeling good.
So which ways does it rotate? Because the Nejikon was just like a cylinder rotation, so you could just rotate forward.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the same.
Is that the only thing it does?
It's just, you know, tilted.
Why is it a sphere?
Your hand. Because it was like the '90s.
I was figuring you'd have more axes of movement on it than just twist.
I don't know. I just remember one time I killed a Covenant elite with a smack to the back of the head, and then I stole his gun, and it looked exactly like this.
That's
also the buttons are bad. Buttons are all there are no two buttons that are the same shape on this controller.
And it kind of looks like there's a D-pad on the top right and other buttons on the left, which is just weird compared because it's non-standard compared to
It looks like this thing is a slider or something on the top left.
It is a D-pad, but let me tell you something. This is during the tyranny of the Nintendo D-pad patent. So every controller that wasn't Nintendo had a horrible D-pad. They had to make it look weird, like round.
Like four arrows, like the PS1.
Yeah, or four separate things. And they were never as good as the Nintendo D-pad because they were just, you know, knockoffs.
Patented, yeah. When did the patent on that run out, by the way? Patents are what, 35 years?
2005 or something. Yeah.
How long is a patent good
for? 2003. 20 years in America.
Oh, 20 years, okay.
But, you know, the Japanese patent, I don't know. But in, you know, 1983 is when the Famicom came out, and they probably patented around that time.
Yeah.
Or for the
Game & Watch.
Donkey Kong Game & Watch, yeah. So, yeah, I think in the mid-2000s it expired.
Yeah, it would have been like 2001, 2002.
And it was nice also. I mean, when the design of Nintendo's control pads expired too, then they opened the floodgates of all the clones, like the 8-bit Duo controllers and stuff. But this period, the late 90s of game pads on PCs was horrible. All of them had horrible pads and horrible buttons, and it was just terrible. There you go.
They couldn't patent circles, though, which I think is the problem of this controller, is that like it looks like there's a D-pad on the upper right, but it's like shaped like seeds. It's like seed shaped.
Yeah. Four oval buttons. Yeah, little like petals.
Petals.
All right, so you have you put on here the Hori mini pad, which is not that weird. It's just like a small controller.
It's a GameCube controller.
Yeah, we can skip that one.
It's actually
it's really cute.
Yeah, it's an N64 controller that actually looks more enjoyable to hold than the real thing because it doesn't have the tri-prong approach. It puts the analog stick, which is pretty much all games used on that system, it puts it on the left side. So instead of on the middle prong, and then it moves the D-pad down to the middle, which is completely unusable.
Yeah.
But what games used the D-pad in a substantial way?
All the wrestling games.
Okay, but did they use it for control or for...
The analog stick on all the wrestling games, which were, for me at least, and for a lot of like pro wrestling fans, those were kind of the killer app of the N64, with stuff like No Mercy and WrestleMania 2000. The D-pad was used for input because all the moves were based on hitting a button in conjunction with a direction.
So like a smash attack?
Yes. But you didn't smash it. The analog stick was used for taunting. So it was down in the middle.
Taunting stick.
So this would be unusable for that, which is only of concern if you are playing N64 pro wrestling games, which
is, you know, a few million people,
which was a big deal on the system and a big deal like at the time for wrestling fans. Yeah, there's a lot of people still today with fond memories of stuff like No Mercy.
Yeah, I mean, I remember ESAC. Yeah.
It's considered the high watermark of pro wrestling games.
Now, this pad is weird, this Hori mini pad, but it's not a bad controller. Oh, no, In fact, it's rare.
Like a GameCube controller.
It's a rare and sought after miniature Nintendo 64 controller that has a better layout. So Hori made really good, and they still make really good products. So this is just weird because it's unusual.
Yeah, I normally use a Hori D-pad on my Switch. They have a D-pad. It won't work when you disconnect. Like it doesn't have Bluetooth, so you have to plug it in.
Plugged in only.
But I only ever play in handheld mode, so I'm fine with that. And it's an actual D-pad as opposed to four buttons that have no relationship to each other.
Yeah, I don't like that very much.
I get why they did it, but it sure is a bad idea for a system that has so many retro style 8-bit games. Just bad. But I think the Switch Lite does not do that. So hooray.
Yay.
Way to go, Nintendo.
Can we get into these weird shaped boys now?
Yeah.
Weird shaped boys.
I actually think we're going to wind down the podcast here because we've been going nearly an hour and this was only supposed to be an hour long.
But I want
to
talk about some of the...
Well, we'll have to do that in a future episode.
We have 3 hours left of this, man. You can't stop us now.
No, there's another episode we got to record. Okay. You guys, You got caught up on the one hand pad.
See, I told you
like, I love Dead or Alive. Oh yeah, a lot. That's where it all went wrong.
I told you this was a good topic.
It was.
We can't stop talking.
And I thought it was just going to be good for your business, but it's also good for our conversation. How about that? Wait, Benj, I'll never doubt you again. All right, so yes, the Weird Boys. Let's wrap with some of the goofiest looking game controllers ever. The gimmicky controllers. These rose to prominence in the mid-2000s. What the hell do we call that decade? The mid-aughts.
The aughts.
It sounds terrible.
It is terrible.
The mid-00s.
It's a decade without a name.
The mid-preteens.
The bombs.
It's the preteens. So these are controllers that were profoundly impractical as devices that you would use when playing a video game. But they sure were fun.
Yeah, I kind of love them. They're, like, pointless. They should, in a just and righteous world, they should not exist. But I love them.
So let's talk about this first one. Go on.
It's a chainsaw.
That looks like a man.
Wait, what?
It's a chainsaw with PS2 buttons on it.
It's the Resident Evil 4 chainsaw controller. I never played Resident Evil 4. Is there a lot of chainsawing in that game? There
is a large guy who will kill you instantly with a chainsaw.
Wait, question. I am raising my hand. You don't use the chainsaw in the game?
I have not played much of Resident Evil 4, but I have seen lots of footage of Leon Kennedy being cut in half with a chainsaw. There's a dude, like He's kind of like the Biggie Man from Splatterhouse. He's just like this huge dude. I think he's wearing like a burlap sack for a mask, if I'm not
mistaken.
Sounds
like a Pyramid Head variant.
Maybe I'm getting mixed up here, but
you might be thinking
he
of
just
the
has
chainsaw mask.
I might be. Yeah. No, I mean he's very much inspired by that. He has a huge chainsaw and he comes after you, and if you don't avoid him and kill him before he gets to you, he just brings his chainsaw down and it like slices through Leon's shoulder and you get a game over screen.
Why would they make the controller shaped like a chainsaw if you're not using the chain? This is driving me wild.
Well,
right
and
now.
So my question on this is, do any of these other like external like handles and levers do anything? Or is it literally just the PS2 controls with a bunch of extra crap tacked on that's just
is this
visual
PS2?
Flare?
I thought it was for GameCube. Oh, no, that is PS2.
It says PS2.
I think they also made it for GameCube.
Could be.
Didn't they?
Like,
possibly.
This should be like a like I don't an think Evil so. Dead controller.
Yeah,
like
Evil Dead
Darkness
is what
controller.
I think so.
Or yeah, I mean, there's
so
like...
Gears of War has the chainsaw?
Picture in here, right?
Where's I did.
Yeah, there's even like a pull start cable on here, but I don't think it functions. We had one of these in the office, you know, because Resident Evil 4 was a game that we reviewed, and so... You know, the publisher sent us one of these, but no one used it. We were all like, okay, well, that'll sit on the top of someone's bookshelf for the rest of
forever.
Its existence.
If I can just get a quick side note, what's the weirdest thing you were ever sent?
I feel like there have been some pretty weird ones, and they all kind of slip my mind right now. I remember there was the brass knuckle incident. I did not get those, but someone got brass knuckles from, I believe, Rockstar from maybe Manhunt?
No, it was
for Rockstar.
Oh, okay.
It was EA.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, and that was illegal, and yep. They got in trouble for it. Nice. Someone got a skull full of vodka.
Sounds delicious.
There have been some odd things, but
things that.
Nothing that jumps out.
I got a giant box for Lollipop Chainsaw when it came out, which should have had this controller, but it didn't have anything super weird. It had pom-poms, which I thought was cute, and it had a bunch of stuff in it, but that's the only thing I remember.
So the weirdest thing I've ever actually gotten video game related that like was not solicited was I won a contest on IGN back in, you know, when it was like PSX Power or whatever. And the prize for the contest was a PlayStation, like they sent a console and a copy of Alundra, which was cool because I wanted that game and I got it for free. But it took like 4 or 5 months for them to actually finally send it to me. And I ended up calling their offices and being like, hey, I won this prize. And like, why don't I have it? And they said, oh, hey, let's connect you. So they connected me to, I want to say Matt Casamassina. And he was like super apologetic that I'd never gotten the package. So they sent it out to me and just threw a ton of useless shit in there, including including meals ready to eat, like military rations, beef stew, and I don't know what else. I'm sure they were given these things as like swag for some other giveaway, and they were just like, dump it on this poor kid, like just give him this crap. So that's it. Like beef stew. I got beef stew one time.
I got an inflatable Omniblade for Mass Effect 3 that you could like put on your arm at San Diego one year, which was pretty cool actually.
I would use that to
it. No. Damn. You could stab Reapers with it, I think.
That's not a bad idea.
By the way, if any of it, I will take whatever weird promotional items video game companies want to send to me. I am very easy to influence. Hmm.
All right, so maybe less dramatically bizarre than the chainsaw. There is a controller that I actually owned. I wish I knew where mine was, but it vanished a while back.
Oh, no.
The Dragon Quest Slime controller, which if you are familiar with Dragon Quest slimes, they are like blue teardrop-shaped guys with a permanent idiotic grin on their face and big, big round eyes. And this controller is that. It's so impractical.
Is it squishy?
No, it's not. It's kind of like a soft touch plastic. Yeah, it's got a finish with like a very sort of soft, as opposed to glassy rubber.
It's the kind that degrades in 20 years and won't come off your hands. Yeah, like
I probably can't find mine because I still own it, but it melted into a puddle.
Yeah,
and I'm just like, what is this weird blob on the carpet?
I know I held one once. It might have been years ago. I don't know. But
because we never met until we started doing Revenants.
That's true, because you weren't out here.
Yeah.
You set it upright and it just looks exactly like it comes with
a little stand. It has a little stand that you can put it on.
You can just put it on a shelf and it looks like a slime.
I think it was a Dragon Quest 8 tie-in.
Yeah. So yeah, you put it on a shelf and it just looks like a slime, and then you flip it over and there's a full set of PS2 controls like on the complete perfectly round underside of this thing. Yeah, so you're holding this giant like hockey, like round hockey puck, or like a Hershey's it's like piss. A curling stone. It's like you're holding a curling stone with PS2 controls. It's not that heavy.
But the placement of controls is kind of weird, and it's like you finally get to see what slime genitals look like. It's really a little.
they look like an analog stick.
The PS2 was
two sticks, man.
Was really the golden age of this thing.
Be sure to pronounce
it?
That very clearly. It kind of sounded like you said penis two.
The PS2 was really the golden age of these things, wasn't it?
Yeah,
like, it was. But this did come back for Dragon Quest 11 on PS4.
Yeah, like they released a new version of it just recently.
Selling them in Japan, and I think they might be available in the U.S.
I want a squishy controller.
It's still not squishy.
But it was not a great and useful little controller, but you know, you're meant to be playing RPGs with it, so it's kind of like the ASCII pad. Like, you don't need great, precise control for that.
The money they sunk into this, it just kills me.
So many people bought these.
To get like a custom tool plastic case and stuff, you gotta sink in tens of thousands of dollars, or maybe 50. And then you got all this engineering involved and everything, and nobody's going to actually use this damn thing.
No, so but people bought it to display because it's based on an iconic character gimmick. We'll end on the final one here, and that is one that's not in the notes, but it's from the same publisher, Square Enix, and that is the Tiny Bee controllers. I don't even know how these work. I remember seeing these when Final Fantasy X-2 came out. They're the Tiny Bee controllers, not because they look like bees, but because Tiny Bees was the name of the two pistols that Yuna used when she became a gunslinger in Final Fantasy X-2. Mm-hmm. You really need to know this stuff. And this controller is two guns. It's like two small guns, kind of like...
It's got this little display.
There's kind of an Art Deco look to them. Yeah. Like the hammer on the back instead is kind of like this...
Well, it's got the whole Final Fantasy X has had this aesthetic of lots of curves and slats.
Yeah. So there's a D-pad on the back of one, and a thumbstick on the back of the other.
Oh, okay. So then you hold the triggers like LR buttons?
Yeah, you can actually take the guns out of the stand.
Yeah.
So it kind of predates like, you know, Wii nunchucks like and Switch Joy-Cons. So you've got like a gun in each hand and you're controlling them. I guess the trigger is the buttons.
Yeah. I wonder if you can map them.
Really weird.
I don't know.
That is genuinely weird.
It is a strange little controller, but again, I don't think this was meant to be used functionally. I think it was meant to be like, hey, kids, you like the Final Fantasy, just like you like the Dragon Quest. Well, now you can have a PS2 controller that's totally impractical, but is fun to put on your shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the nadir, in my opinion, of weird controllers, because it's not really about function. It's just about aesthetics, and mm-hmm. to the point where the aesthetics make it pretty much impractical to control. I feel like there have been others of these through the years, but those are the ones that strike me the most, because they are the most, like, they were kind of like the innovators in this foul space.
Foul.
This filthy space.
It's a cool space, adorable. Though.
The function-free controllers that are just about aesthetics?
Yeah. I mean, they gave us something to talk about.
They so did. For 10 minutes. Okay, so they were worth 10 minutes of podcast mm-hmm. time.
We owe them a debt of gratitude.
Yeah, well, I bought one, so they got like 40 yep. bucks from me. So that's it. That's my gratitude. That's what my 10 minutes is worth. I wish my 10 minutes was worth 40 bucks. Mm. Man, I'd be rolling it. Okay, anyway.
That's an excellent rate, actually.
Yeah. That's not bad at all. I'd be okay with that.
That's like a lawyer.
It's like $250 an hour. Yeah, that's, yeah. That is definitely lawyer or range. Like therapist.
Sub lawyer.
Yeah, I'm your retro games therapist, Jeremy Parrish. Thanks yeah. for visiting the couch. This has been your Retronauts couch trip.
You should add a Patreon goal that is that's yeah.
Pay me $250 an hour.
No, I mean listening to Jeremy's soothing voice for an hour. I think you could get.
I can't believe I'm giving this away for free.
Yeah.
All right.
Damn.
So we made it like a quarter of the way through this episode.
We made it like halfway through.
That was not halfway. That's not halfway.
We mostly got the moving around ones left to talk about.
We did. Okay, so we'll reconvene someday and talk about other weird controllers, and maybe by then, Benj will have even more bizarre controllers of his own creation to talk about.
You never know.
Until then, go check out some of these. Maybe don't try to use the slime controller or the tiny bees. They're neat, but not really practical. But some of these controllers are very practical, and they're still, you know, kind of worth remembering and worth tracking down, especially like, yeah, the Negicon, some of that stuff, pretty great. So that's it. That's weird control pads.
Part one.
We'll this was, weird, like, what was this one called? Stuff. This section was
Gamepad Plus, basically. Okay. Like gamepads yeah. in weird configurations.
So next time we'll talk about things like
we've got joysticks.
Very, very specific single-use controllers, inflatable guys you can punch in order to play a video game.
And then I'm really interested in like the hands-free stuff, the yeah. like detectors, because they're weird and they mostly don't work. But people tried to. Do
I feel
some
like
really
we've
interesting
just
things
barely, barely. You know, this is like the tip of the iceberg. This is the 10% above the surface.
Yeah, these are
the
ones
water.
That are still at heart a normal controller with buttons and D-pads. Yeah. They're just in weird configurations. And
next
then
time
you've got the totally out there stuff.
Next time we are going to dive into the Arctic waters and see what's below the surface. But until then, Benj, thanks for putting all of this together, or most of this together.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it was a good suggestion. I had fun talking about these things and lamenting the existence of tiny bees.
Like I told you before, I've had a folder of like hundreds of these things because I've been collecting them for years and years, decade probably. So there's just way too many we could ever talk about, you know.
And I feel like we don't get as many of these anymore just because so much has standardized around the DualShock.
I mean,
like
that was the miracle of the Wii generation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, except for, of course, everything Nintendo keeps putting out.
And also the DS, where you had stuff like, what was it, the DJ game that had like a controller adapter for the DS that was like a tiny turntable. That was great. Or the Wonder Swan DDR adapter. It was like a tiny adapter for your handheld game system. Great stuff.
Yep.
As long as video games exist and do things that aren't just, you know, running and jumping and shooting, people will come up with strange control schemes and devices to allow you to make full use of those strange control schemes. And like I said, next time we'll talk about some more of those. But that's it for this episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And thanks, you guys, for being here. Let's do the outro things that we always do. I should have this down to a patter by now, but I don't. I'm Jeremy Parrish, and you can find me on the internet on Twitter as GameSpite and other places. Look for me around. You can find Retronauts at retronauts.com on places like iTunes and Libsyn and other subscription services. Not subscription, you get it for free. But if you want to, you can subscribe to us. Get everything a week early in higher bitrate quality with no advertisements, and that's through patreon.com/retronauts. $3 a month gets you all that good stuff. More bucks a month gets you other stuff that's cool and good and might be of interest to you.
Like an autographed picture of me.
Edward. We're still working on that tier, unfortunately. We haven't quite hit that goal
$3,000.
Yet. $3,000. So, yes, check it out. If you like the show, support us. It helps feed me, and I appreciate that. It also helps feed these guys when they come record with us, and I know they appreciate that. So, guys, you do your outros. Ben.
All right, I'm Ben Elgin. You can find me on Twitter at Kirin, K-I-R-I-N-N. I have some blog stuff that's kind of on hiatus at the moment, so I won't plug that right now. Jeremy was giving me a hard time earlier for being like the only Retronauts guy without another podcast to plug. So maybe someday I'll have to do something about that, but not yet. So stay tuned.
And I'm Ben Edwards. I am currently in hiding so that I do not get too many joystick orders. But when I come back, bxfoundry.com will have all of your joystick, satisfy all your joystick needs.
Including the Cyclops.
The Cyclops, yeah. BX10 Cyclops. And you can find me on Twitter at Ben Edwards. Chris?
I'm Chris Sims, and you can find all of my stuff at the-isb.com. That has links to all the stuff that I write, other podcasts that I do. My contact info is on there if you want to send me a weird controller or...
Two or three.
If you got War College Boy. I'm also on the terrible website Twitter as at the ISB.
All right, everyone. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk about this stuff more someday down the road in the future. But for now, that's all you get. Sorry. We have to cut it off at some point, and this is it.